It is over there, back over there with him. Ready? All right. Good afternoon. It is now 4:08 p.m. and I'm going to call the meeting to order. I see that we cannot approve the minutes because we don't have a quorum, correct?
Now.
Do we?
Yes. With Robert's passing, you're down to five members.
Oh my God. All right. So if you haven't already reviewed the October minutes, and if you have, approve them.
Second.
All right, it has been approved. It has been second. Sorry, I apologize. I didn't know. We lost one body. Okay, so we'll go on to public comment. Do we have anyone? Is that you or no? Is that you? Okay, all right. Mr. Steve Long, is that you?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, come on up. Okay. Thank you. Go up to the podium. Thank you so much.
Steve Long, City of Jacksonville, Public Works. Before I get started about Public Works, I was just going to pass along some information. I go to a meeting every month at the Greater Arlington Beaches CPAC Committee, and Mr. Roberts was one of our members, and he came every month, and he gave an update every month about the True Commission, and he was very proud of what you all do on this commission, and he reported back every month. And like I say, he was very proud of that, and I know he's missed through CPAC, and I'm sure y'all miss him here as well. All right. Good afternoon. This afternoon, what I was going to do is I was going to share a few things with you about Public Works. I'm the director of Public Works. I have been the director now for about 35 days or so in an acting capacity, and I've been the actual director for about a week and one day now, so still relatively new in the job, but I've been with Public Works for the past 23 years, and some of the topics I'm going to talk about today, and it's based on the letter I received from y'all, are about CIP kind of grading and ranking, CIP prioritization as how the projects get prioritized, moved up into the current years and that sort of thing, city versus in-house construction, and then finally a little bit about oversight and management of our projects. So what I'll start with is about the CIP grading and ranking. And one thing that I want you to be aware of, and you probably are, but I just want to make sure, is that I'll only be speaking about Public Works CIP. The CIP is made up of projects from Parks Department, Fire Department, Sheriffs, Environmental Quality. All sorts of people participate in the CIP. But as it relates to Public Works, basically what we do is we go through and we receive requests for projects from many different locations. Some of them are through residents. You'll have a drainage issue somewhere. You go out and investigate it. You find out it's a long-term issue. You find out it's an issue that isn't related to maintenance. It may require a project. So we develop potential for a project, and we put that onto a list. And what ends up happening is as we approach our budget year every year, we have all of these projects that are out there that would be considered new projects, and we go through a ranking matrix. We look at for drainage, and each project type has a different ranking system, so I'll just kind of walk through a few of those. For drainage, we might look at, are there houses being flooded? If there's houses being flooded, that's going to bump a project up to the top of the list, versus a drainage problem where you get a little bit of standing water in the road. a house being flooded is much more important than a little bit of water in the road. So we use prioritization, and we do that. On buildings, if we're looking at public buildings type of projects, we look at the building envelope first, because if a building envelope is not functioning, and that would be the exterior, the roof, the windows, if you're having water penetration into a building, that's a much larger, it ranks higher than a building where you're looking at, you have an intermittent HVAC problem, or you might need to, you know, call a plumber in to do some plumbing rework. So we go through and we prioritize based on severity and level of how it impacts a building, how it impacts drainage, a bridge, if we were doing a bridge type of project, bridges get evaluated every 2 years by FDOT. They do a complete evaluation, and then they give us a report. And it's kind of interesting. If you ever see any of the articles in the paper, you'll see sometimes they'll say, you know, 70 bridges were found to be deficient. Well, a bridge can be deficient if the guardrail's damaged. The bridge itself has no issue, but the guardrail was damaged. So they note that. But you could also have a bridge that's deficient because they find cracking in the bridge deck or something like that that requires a project to be developed to address it. If it's something that is going to cause damage to the bridge, be a potential safety issue, we would rank that higher than something that is a superficial type of issue. We have some bridges that are old bridges. They don't meet today's standards. They may not be wide enough. They may have a little bit of a sharper curve on the top of them than you do for today. That doesn't make something rank higher. Something, if we do that years down the road, if we replace that, if we repair that, it doesn't impact safety. It doesn't impact the usage of the bridge. So we have that prioritization method that we use on all of the projects we do. And so that brings us to how projects move up in the CIP. So what ends up happening is, for us, as we go through, we have a five-year CIP plan at the city. And so if you look at the CIP that was passed back at the end of September, you'll see all of these projects listed. And there's a group of projects that are funded this year in FY22-23. And then you'll see there are projects that are funded next year, and they go out 5 years. And then we have what's called Beyond Fifth. And when we're looking at public works projects, what we do is each year going into the budget, we have our new projects that we'll present, and then we have projects that are in that Beyond Fifth. The projects that are already shown to be funded in certain years, they just move up. So next year when we go to 23-24, the projects currently in 23-24 will get funded, we'll perform those projects. What ends up happening is, as we have projects in Beyond Fifth, we'll move those into that fifth year as need arises. So if we go through and we've had projects in that Beyond Fifth, and we go into the budget process, we'll request through the mayor's office that we'd like to move these projects up based on our prioritization. We'll move the highest prioritized projects up first, and they'll move up. Typically, they move into that fifth year. What happens occasionally is you will have something that we've been watching. We need to put a drainage system in somewhere. We need to do a large repair type of project, and it's shown to be, say, in that fifth year. But if we went out this summer and we were doing an evaluation, and we found, while doing that evaluation, we found a safety issue, something that had made that issue much worse than we thought it would be. We thought, you know what, we'll keep an eye on this, we'll keep it maintained, we'll do it in 5 years. But if you get out and you find something has come up to where, you know what, it can't wait 5 years, when we're doing our meeting with the mayor's office to discuss our projects, we'll ask for a project to be moved up. And so those are typically safety-related, drainage-related. And, again, we prioritize them, but that type of immediate safety need would really make a project move up several years. So we put them in Beyond Fifth is the most part. Then projects are advanced, as I said. And when we go through, once we have all of those projects listed, once they go into that CIP, we get into the year they're funded, we go to construction. And I know one of the questions that had been asked was, I forget exactly how it was asked, but basically, how much do we do with contract labor? How much do we do with in-house? Well, at the city, basically for the last 15 or so years, almost all construction we do is done through contract labor. City forces anymore are used for major maintenance and minor maintenance, but major maintenance and below. So if it's a CIP project, it is almost 100% going to be done by a contractor. Years ago, we had forces in-house where we did construction in-house, but just as the, you know, as time has gone on, as economies have changed, we do almost everything through a contract labor pool. So we will go and we'll take a project, we'll put it out, we'll advertise it through the city's procurement department. We go through, we advertise it, we get bids, we evaluate the bids, and we'll award to the lowest qualified bid. And I say lowest qualified because sometimes you'll get a contractor that submits a bid, and there's certain documents you have to submit, there's certain requirements you have to meet. And if you're building a bridge, you don't want a guy trying to construct it who owns a pickup truck and a shovel. You need a bridge company to do it. So we evaluate those bids, and we take the lowest qualified bidder. Once we award the project, then we go into the construction phase after all of the contracts are executed. And that kind of leads me to the next thing that was asked. Question was asked in the invitation about our oversight and management of projects. When a project through Public Works goes to construction, it's constructed out of our engineering and construction management division. That's headed up by our city engineer. And he has a group in his construction section that's made up of professional engineers and gentlemen with building construction degrees. And the building construction degree is it's a degree that basically specializes, 100% in construction and construction management. So what they do is they'll go through and they'll be the actual project manager on the construction job. We'll have a contractor doing the work, but they're the person that's responsible to make sure the contractor performs the work per the documents and specifications, make sure that the contractor is paid in accordance with the actual work they do, provides the oversight, and provides the accountability for the job. Oftentimes, we'll support their efforts by hiring what's called a construction and engineering inspection company, which that company will actually be on a job site day-to-day. So as a contractor is digging up a road and putting in new drainage pipes, they're checking to make sure as those pipes are going in that the bedding the pipe sits in is compacted properly. They're checking to make sure the pipes are put together properly. If it's concrete pipe, the pipes are seated well and they have a gasket in place and the joints are wrapped. That helps make sure that the pipes don't leak and that sort of thing. They'll be on site and they'll be basically the city's eyes and ears to go that reports directly to our construction manager. One of the other big things they do is they do product testing and materials testing. So if a contractor is saying, hey, we're ready to pave now, we've got the road base in place, they go out and they do the testing of that road base to make sure the density on the material is good, to make sure the water content is appropriate so that we can pave. And they do that for all sorts of things. When the concrete's delivered to pour curb and gutters, they make sure the concrete that was sent out in the truck is tested and that it meets our specifications. You know, because you can have not all concrete's the same. It's one of those, you know, concrete's one of those. It looks the same when it dries, but it's not. You have concretes that are weaker and concretes that are stronger. Concretes have more water versus less water. And so, like on a sidewalk job, concrete may be specified at 2,500 pounds per square inch. And that's kind of a low scale. It's super strong, but it's low scale on concrete. But if you're doing something that is more critical, like a bridge, you may get up in the 5,000-6,000 PSI range. So that's concrete that's much more strong, is much more dense, that sort of thing. So they make sure we're getting the materials that we've actually specified and ordered. And the construction manager, he starts off the project. He has a pre-construction meeting where everybody's present in the room. The client, because we construct projects for other people, within the city, not just in our engineering division, we'll construct projects for anybody who has a project that they can't handle. So if the sheriff gets money to build a new building, they'll actually come to us and we'll construct that building for them. So the sheriff might be in a meeting, or his representative, not the sheriff himself, but his representative The actual construction firms there, our construction managers there, their CEI group is there. They lay out the expectations for the job. The bottom line is we expect to get good value for our dollar and to get our project built as designed, as specified. During the course of construction, vertical type of projects tend to run into it less than projects that are horizontal, which would be like roadway and drainage. Vertical projects, you have less change in a project because of the fact once you get your foundation in, everything above that is kind of new construction and you're controlling it. When you're doing a roadway job, when you're doing a drainage job, so much of the project involves digging into the earth. What happens is when you're designing the job, you do upfront testing, but the testing is really good for the spot that you test at. But it doesn't guarantee that when you move 50 feet over that you're going to have the same exact thing. So one of the big things we do is we do what's called geotechnical testing, and that tests the dirt, tells us how strong it is, that sort of thing. But you can move 50 feet, and it may be slightly different soil. It may be a different bedding requirement. So when we do horizontal projects, you will see that those oftentimes have change orders on them, and it's due to unforeseen conditions, things that you don't know before you actually dig into the ground. And it's one of those, we do everything we can up front to limit those. However, when you run into conditions that it's to nobody's fault, you just run into a condition you didn't expect, that's when we have to issue a change order. One of the things we also do is we hold the teams that design our projects accountable. If we find that a change order is needed for something because of a design error, we make our design companies, they have insurance, and we will go after them to make them responsible for paying for those changes. When it's something that, it was unforeseen, that's just the way it is, and the city pays for that cost. But if it's something that should have been anticipated, should have been known, then we will go after a design firm. So that guarantees us when we do a project, it goes through, it gets constructed, it gets built, and at the end we get a project that is exactly as we intended it to be. It meets the needs of the city. It's delivered at the best price we can get it at, so it's good for our taxpayer dollars. That's one of the things I stress with my group is when we do anything, one of the big things we have is we have to be good stewards of taxpayer dollars. That's one of our first and foremost goals. We got to give a good project, but we don't do it for any more than we absolutely have to. So that kind of highlights the issues that I was kind of asked to come in and speak about. But I am willing, if you have questions, to answer anybody's questions. And if I don't have an answer for you, I will be glad to bring it back at a future time for you.
Maybe I could pose a question that was brought up at the last meeting that kind of led the group to suggest that maybe we should bring you in. One of the commissioners lives, I think, in Nocatee, in the Jacksonville part of Nocatee, and he was talking about a road project that he goes by all the time. Remember what road that was? Not San Pablo. Racetrack Road, was that it? Yeah, he was saying that they're going to widen the road. They put in these like power poles down the sides, and then a year later they came along, took all the power poles back out again. Like, what's that about? Why didn't somebody foresee that was going to have to come out before they did this other work? And so he was just thinking, well, who coordinates like with FDOT and JEA, and how does all of that work? And does it all work together, or do they just all do their own thing? And if we got to take your stuff out, we take it out, and then we put it back again.
Right. Okay. And I can address that for you. One thing is, Racetrack Road is the majority of it, 99% of it, is a St. Johns County road, not a City of Jacksonville road. We do have about 3/8 of a mile of it is in the City of Jacksonville, and that is a project between Bartram Park Boulevard and the interstate that is in the process of, it's going to be widened. and they've started doing some of the utility work and that sort of thing. And that's not a City of Jacksonville project. That's actually a private development project that is doing that through a developer agreement with the City of Jacksonville. But what ends up happening with utilities, with other agencies, before we go and do any type of construction, when we're in the design phase, one of the things we always have is we have utility coordination and utility design, because some of the things I was telling you earlier about when you're underground, you dig in the ground, and not only do you have soils issues, but you have potential to run into water lines, you have potential to run into sewer lines, buried electric, TECO people's gas, the cable companies, any sorts of things are buried underground. So what we do is when we're doing the design of a project, we start our design, and then at a certain point, we send those designs out to our various agencies that are, you know, we consider them partners because they work with us closely and well, and we'll send them out. And when we send them out, they'll mark up plans, and they'll show exactly. We survey and try to determine where all of their facilities are, but then they confirm them back to us. And when we start seeing things need to be relocated or we see things need to be adjusted as we come through and do design, we'll do one of two things. We'll require them to move their facilities, or we'll do our design where we can avoid them when possible, but that's not always, you know, available to do. So what you may have seen on the power poles is it may have been one of those where those power poles would belong to JEA. They may have been moving them as part of their normal course of work, potentially replacing the old wooden poles with the new concrete poles. And then as this project comes along, they're made aware of the fact we're going to be doing a widening project. So then they move them to where the final location is even before construction starts. So you get that sort of thing, and it isn't often, but when that happens, there's no charge to the city. That sort of work is by the utilities, it's borne by the utilities, so it wouldn't be a cost to the City of Jacksonville. Yes, sir.
I live on Old Middlebrook Road South. Same company, just keep doing it over.
Yeah. Right, and I can tell you with some of the BJP projects, and I don't have the specifics about Old Middleburg Road, but I can tell you they started off and they did design on some of these projects, and Old Middleburg was one of them. And then the projects, for whatever reason, may have gone dormant. So that would have been, that had been phase one. And then what ended up happening was, if you remember, they constructed Collins Road and tied in to Old Middleburg, and they did, I believe it was the north side of Collins Road. So they came in and they did work on Collins, and they did survey along Old Middleburg from where they were tying in. So that would have been a second thing, but that was constructed. Then just recently they completed the four-laning of Collins Road, so they built the other set of two lanes. They came in again and did work, plus they put in the signal at Old Middleburg and Collins and the turn lane. They kind of did that turn lane because it didn't have the turn lane at the signal. They did that, so that was the third time. Where we are today is we have a company on board, and we have... That project is referred to in two phases, north and south. The north segment is completely designed, and we're doing, right now, we're performing work to obtain the needed property, the needed right-of-way. So we're out, we're approaching property owners, we're looking to buy, because as they widen, if the right-of-way widens out 5 feet on each side, we have to go out and we have to talk to each property owner. We have to try to buy the 5 feet, or and I don't know the exact width we're buying, but whatever that width we'd be widening, we have to buy the property from the property owner. So that's currently occurring on the north. on the south end of the project, and I'm sorry, I don't remember where we make the break point, but the south end of the project, we're approaching 90% completion. And as soon as we get to 90%, the same thing's happening. We're doing our property acquisition so that as plans are completed, because what happens is at 90%, you know your right-of-way needs. Those are locked down. You're finalizing the project itself, some of the design elements, but you aren't changing the right-of-way width. So we'll be out doing that right-of-way acquisition. So what ends up happening is from the potential first time they had a contract in place to do design to now has only been two contracts. But what ends up happening is when you start a project like that over after it's been dormant for so long, you can't use the information that was there before because of the fact so many new subdivisions were built along that road. We had to do another RFP process following city rules. We couldn't just go to the first company and give them the job again. We have to follow what's called CCNA, which is the Consultants Competitive Negotiation Act or something. I think that's what it stands for. Please don't hold me to that, but I believe that's what it stands for. So we had to do that, so we got a new consultant on board. And what would end up happening is if they used another engineer's work, they have to get a letter from them. They have to get it certified that they're allowed to use it. But with the amount of changes that have occurred out there, you think BJP, I think, passed in 2001. Today's 2022. There's probably 15 new subdivisions that have been built out there that abut the roadway and that sort of thing. Lanes have been added in certain turn areas. So they had to do the entire survey over again to get information, ensure it's accurate, so when we go to construction that we don't have anything happen to where we go. A contractor goes, you gave us bad information. Everything we're doing is up to date, so there's no excuse. So we avoid those change orders on the construction side as much as possible by ensuring we have the latest and greatest information for them. On those first two, on the original and then now, yes, sir. Right, but part of those were the Collins Road project, which were constructed. So those were constructed, and, I mean, that was work that had to be done to construct Collins Road, and part of that was the tie-in to that area, you know, from basically like the library to maybe 500, 1,000 feet north of the actual roadway. They would have taken survey data as needed, but that was all paid for as part of that construction effort.
Short little turn name on the left.
Okay. And those type of issues, those get resolved when we build the build out for the old Middleburg project. Yes, sir.
The work to do that
right, and that work itself was done by the new subdivision, I think, that's in that southeast quadrant. Is there a new subdivision at Sandler on the southeast quadrant? I mean, it's not new, but it's 4 or 5 years old. Yeah.
That road going in there was, but I don't know who did the turn lane.
Right.
To go in.
Right. That was the developer. Yes, sir.
The drains are higher than the road level. The drains got you.
Yeah.
like that. So they, who do they, who would he go, or the neighbors or the citizens in that area, who would they go to report it to?
The best way to report anything to the city is through our 630 city number, because it, when it comes in there, it'll get, like for a drainage issue or a patching issue, that goes directly to our right-of-way and stormwater maintenance division. And then they would go out and investigate it and take any sort of appropriate action. When, like specifically at Sandler, when the developer was doing that, that doesn't come through Public Works. That goes through our planning group and through our development services group. And that's one of those, once they build it and give it to Public Works, we own it and maintain it after that. And then we have to try to, we do what we can to make the road functional. With the widening of Old Middleburg, that'll be a City of Jacksonville Public Works project through BJP. And we'll make sure when it's done and finished that it functions and that it works exactly as we intend it to. It's a big project. It's a big project. Have they approached you about purchasing right-of-way? Yeah. So you know what I'm talking about when I say we're trying to acquire right-of-way right now. Yes, sir.
I'm probably on the south end.
Yeah, I think that, I can't remember the name of the road, and I wish I had it off the top of my head, but yeah, there's that break point, and the north segment is smaller than the south segment. It's not Marley. It's like Vero, Vaquero. I'd have to look. I can't remember it off the top of my head.
When you do have an overrun.
What would end up happening in a case like that? Right, there's penalties built into the contract. So what we do is we have a section in our contract. It's called liquidated damages. And so for a project, and we schedule our projects basically in days. So when they get their notice to proceed, we'll say, you know, you have 365 days to construct this project. If they take 370 days, then there's 5 days late, there's 5 days of liquidated damages. And the liquidated damages, the amount is called out on each project. There's standard language where it's like 0.1% per day. So if you're 10 days late, you've lost 1% of your contract value. You're 100 days late, you've lost 10% of your contract value. So it adds up pretty quickly. But what ends up happening is those liquidated damages based on days can be mitigated if there's a reason why. So say somebody finished a job next week and it was 5 days late, but they told us, you know, the city closed us down for Ian where we couldn't work on that Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, because we told all of our contractors during that time, get off our roads, make sure all of our lanes are open, make sure your signs are out of the road, make sure everything's safe, because if we need people to evacuate, we want everything we can to be open and running. So they would keep track of things like that. So those 3 days, they would get to reclaim. They would say, we're 5 days late, but 3 days are attributable to the city. And then there are other things that can happen if you had something that was an unanticipated situation and we had to do a change order. If we found there was unsuitable soils that nobody knew about, when we do those, we'll actually adjust the contract date to account for that. So if we do a change order. It says you're going to, you know, go in and over-excavate, you know, 8 feet down to take that bad material out. We might say we're going to give you 7 days to do that. So that adds on to the contract. So there isn't a cost to the city when a project runs long, but if it's not justified, there's definitely a cost to the contractor, so the city recoups those dollars. And that's through, like I said, through our liquidated damages process.
I know his phone number.
Okay, great. Well, we thank you for coming. I see there was a lot of discussion on this last month, so we thank you for coming.
All right. Thank you for the invitation. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Auditor's report.
Yes, ma'am. Through the chair to the commission, the council auditor's office released two reports since the last true commission meeting. Report number 781B, which is the follow-up of my animal care and protective services audit, was released on October 19th of 2022. This report was the second follow-up on animal care and protective services audit. Found on this follow-up, there were three issues remaining out of 13 original issues. The three issues were all internal control weaknesses. One issue was internal control weakness, cash handling procedures. They're still not fully compliant, and it's basically due to vacancies that they've had. What we found, the same person had custody of the cash and was preparing reconciliations, maintaining account records, basically a lack of segregation of duties. And then monthly reconciliations of revenues that were received per the system out at Animal Care and Control, and the accounting system were not being performed. And then the assigning of cash deposit responsibilities to another employee for at least 1 week on an annual basis, and they weren't able to do that due to vacancies as well. But they've since, in their response, they said we've had the training that will, you know, it should be fixed when we go back out for the third follow-up. The other internal control weakness was access rights, removal of access for terminated employees. There is a policy in place, the division chief has been added to do the weekly access report to ensure that this access right review is accomplished. And the third internal control weakness was policy and procedures still need to be updated, particularly with reference to the new system. Out of 10 policies, two still needed to be updated. Those two were still referencing the old accounting system and things like that. So out of the original audit, which had 13 items, there are three remaining, and so there will be another follow-up for animal care and protective services. Any questions on that one? The second report was report number 751C, which was the follow-up on fire and rescue. Fire Rescue Department Ambulance Billing and Inventory Audit, and this was released on October 20th of 2022. There were just two items on this follow-up remaining from the original audit. We found that inventory counts on logistical support facility and tactical support facility are now being conducted both on a routine and surprise basis in accordance with written procedures. This was the only outstanding item that was remaining from this original audit. And so since all items were cleared, this report will be closed. Okay. No questions. That concludes my report.
Any questions? What's audit committee? Do we have one?
Ma'am.
Legislative tracking committee, that was.
Ma'am.
I see you guys had an election last month. I missed that. Old business?
Part of what was That's new what business as far as what would be our next steps with the public works.
We have new business. I think he did. I mean, I wasn't here last month when you guys went over there, but I think he did it, you know, to the best of his ability, a fine job explaining how it works. So I've learned a lot today about it. Tyson was kind of not too happy about certain things, which is understandable, but I did learn a lot from it. Ask him?
Yes.
Uh-oh.
Overview that was kind of needed an opportunity to comprehend the information.
Digest it.
Yes.
Correct.
And then come back with, well, what about this or that or the other? Invite him or
back,
someone back,
back
again
from his team.
After we get our questions that we didn't.
Do you have a probability that we can get him back in or someone from the crew? Because I know the main people who wanted him here, they're not here. They're absent.
So. I think we can talk about that at the next meeting.
Okay.
They can read the minutes. You all can discuss what Mr. Long had to say. And if there's something they want to follow up on,
perhaps
we
can
decide that.
I got
Maybe
you.
Write him a letter and ask him other questions.
To come or, back. All right. Appreciate it. Thank you. Following right along. Okay. And, any comments from the commissioners?
There is an appointment coming. Another council president appointee will be.
Okay, awesome. So one coming.
One coming.
Definitely. Oh, we did have a lot. With that at all? No. Yeah, well, I think we inquired about it a couple of times in the past year.
Six from the council president, six from the mayor, and one from each of the six CPACs.
Well, any more questions, anything? We are just moving right along, aren't we? When is the next? So the election is every, 2 years? Is it every year, once a year, the election for officers?
Every year.
Okay. I just missed it because I was out sick. Okay.
Really?
Daniels, how many years is that for Daniel? Again? Well, I wasn't here to vote. I mean, to be a part of, I didn't know you guys. I didn't know. And apparently you guys had a quorum, so I, you know, so you guys was able to do it, because I think you cannot do it if you didn't have a quorum, correct?
Correct, yeah.
If I had to know, I mean, but I wasn't feeling my best. I thought it was, is this second? It seems like it's his third. It's more than 2 years.
This is his third now.
Okay, well, have a motion to adjourn the meeting? Second? All right. Has been moving second. Thank you all.
What time is it? This is a record.
Get your stickers for parking. And Ms. Velma, I apologize. You should have been the one running a meeting, because you're